Welcome back to the Naked Podcast. Today I'm joined by my partner, Greg, and my daughter, Ellie, as we talk about how we navigated her journey of trauma. And today we're answering your questions, and she's joining us here for part of that as well. If you haven't listened to episodes 60 and 61, I highly recommend you head back there, listen to those first before you jump into this podcast, because this one really explains more about how we navigated the journey of pain, trauma, healing. Thank you so much for being here and for joining us and listen to this episode. Welcome to season 2 of The Naked Podcast, a space where ordinary people, just like you and me, share the moments that changed everything. This podcast was inspired by a conversation I had with my grandma, who once said, "If more of us shared our stories, fewer of us would feel alone." And that's exactly what we do here. On Naked, we talk about all the things, the wins, the losses, the growth, and the struggles. These are raw, unfiltered conversations about the parts we rarely talk about, but deeply connect us. We are grateful you are here as we open up about the moments that shaped us. This is The Naked Podcast. Welcome to The Naked Podcast. I'm here with my partner, Greg. And today we're diving into your questions, answering your questions about a season we went through. So if you haven't listened to episode 60, you're going to want to go back and listen to that. It's where our daughter talks about the trauma she went through and that season of darkness and healing and how she's still weeding through it. And it's really pivotal to this conversation because we're answering questions based on that season of our lives. So welcome here.
Well, thank you.
Cheers.
Cheers.
Of course, we're here with drinks. I have a cinnamon tea. You're just my coffee guy.
A Vienna blend or Vienna brewed coffee.
Oh, yeah. Nice.
Roasted. Vienna roasted.
Well, mine's Sipalicious from Linden, Alberta.
Oh, yes.
So it's delicious. Anyways, yeah, so here we are chatting about a time in our life, in our marriage, where things did change us again. And how that impacted us. So there's some really good questions, I thought.
Let's go.
Let's roll with them. The first question is, what are you most proud of as parents from that specific season in your life?
Proud's an interesting...
Yeah, it is.
Phrasing. I don't... For me, I think it would be the damn the torpedoes response, where it's like we just go ahead. We removed everything that we possibly could during that phase to create space and movement and attention for healing. Like we left the country that we were in. Our plan was to stay longer. We had... fantastic place, all wrapped up, things paid for. We didn't have any plans on leaving at that moment, but we realized, like, this can't happen here. Mm-hmm. So then we pull shoot.
Yeah.
And got on flights almost immediately. Got out of the house, sold, packed.
We did.
Gave away everything and just left.
Yeah.
To change the environment, change the circumstances, the influences, so that the environment plays a big, big part. Mm-hmm. When something shifts dramatically, changing that environment can be mm-hmm. crucial mm-hmm. to allow change to come in other places. So for me, I think that's what I'd be most proud of, is just our willingness to disrupt anything and everything to create a better environment.
Yeah.
You?
This question, it kind of ties into some of the other questions that are coming. So it's kind of hard to know how to answer it. But I think for me, it was just like listening to my knower, like listening. And I remember when I came to you and I was like, we need to leave. And you're like, what? I'm like, I think we need to leave. It's like everything that we had at that time felt like it was quite harmonious. It was like, mm-hmm. how does each day just get better than yesterday? Right. And then this happened, and it was like trying to be as much of a comfort for her in those early days, but realizing very quickly that like this was so much bigger than either one of us knew how to tackle. Mm-hmm. And listening, I think, which I'll tie into more later, but like just leading by intuition and not being afraid in so many facets of that time. Mm. Like, and leaving was one of those. It was like, it was survival for her. And it meant we needed to change our entire world and our entire plan. And it really disrupted a lot of things we maybe had here for the benefit of knowing well enough that she needed to be like pulled away. She needed to be able to like eject from the surroundings. This was so triggering. Everything was just so triggering.
Yeah.
So I think trusting my knower. Yeah. And letting that be enough.
We've talked about this before, but I remember reading about a village where the tradition is when someone dies, everybody paints their house, the outside, so that when people go out into the village, it's not like everything's the same and their world has completely been shattered and is completely different, but their entire environment, everything they experience is different. So everyone experiences something that is now different.
Right.
So it's like a solidarity, but it allows for everything to be different because it all shifted. It all changed with the death of the person or the event or whatever it is. So I think the changing of an environment, even if like it's as simple as painting a wall in your home, a different color, it allows, your environment allows for things to be different when things have changed and become different within you.
For you. I think that's really true. Okay, this is a good question. Trauma has many different effects. Did this bring the two of you closer or further apart?
I don't know, both?
Yeah. When I reflect back on that season, for me, I have pictures of us in our bedroom just holding each other and crying and not knowing any answers, and just the comfort of holding each other, that we knew we had each other. To me, it doesn't feel like a time where we were at odds. There were different conversations for sure, that we saw things differently, but I don't feel like it ever created separation, as long as I remained open, because I tend to shut down sometimes and pull away. Even when I know something, I'm like, intuitively, and like sometimes I know something and I'm like, I don't really want that to be the case, and so I'll like reject
just
that,
don't acknowledge it.
Yeah. And then sometimes oftentimes you'll say this thing that I'm feeling and I'm like, oh, it's so annoying, like now it just feels more concrete, like I don't even want to say it out loud, you know. We just had it the other day about the Christmas tree. It's like, you know, I think for me, I have fondness of us feeling close in that time, and being stretched by you in certain things when you would say certain things about what we should or shouldn't do.
To tell.
I think like in the essence of like reaching for her, and there was a lot of fear. Probably, I express mine probably more openly than you do, but there's a lot of fear of like, what's happening? Like, how do we stop it? It's like, you're trying to close the gate, you know, before she leaves completely. It's like, you're trying to find the, how do you somehow keep her in a space where she feels safe enough that she doesn't just like fade into the dark.
Right.
You know? And so for me, there was a lot of that like internal panic of how do we save her? How do we protect her from getting so far away? And in that, I was afraid to demand. Demand's not the right word. So there was this time in the season where Ellie was like, she would wear 3-4, you know, bras and 4 or 5 shirts and 3 shirts of shorts. And
layer upon
and
layer.
Layer. And then she'd be wrapping herself in blankets.
And it's like 30 degrees.
It was hot. It was the hottest time of the year with no AC in her house. It was about probably 36 every day. And it was just so incredibly hot just standing in a room, never mind wearing layers of clothing. And I remember being like, we were talking like, how do we help her? And you're like, well, we just have to tell her. And I was so afraid that in telling her that, like, I remember when you're like, you need to choose, and the therapist was like, she needs to choose. This is really unhealthy for her You need to give her an ultimatum. You need to let her to choose. She's going to wear the pants or she's going to have shorts and blankets. Like, what's the choice? She can't have both. It's just really not good for her health. And me being really afraid of making that what felt like an unreasonable request based on her actions and based on how every day she felt further away. She's like, she slipped further and further out of our arms, out of our distance, really, because she wasn't near our arms, but you know, out of our distance. I was like, oh my goodness, what does this do? And you had just a really calm knowing, like, no, this is, we can, like, this is what we're going to do. And it's in moments like that, that I would, I was more afraid to make those, have those conversations because I was worried about what that would turn into.
Where that would go.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You tend to project out further.
Yeah.
More of a pig. I like the mud. Like, get me in the mud. I have no problem dealing with things in the moment.
Yeah.
I don't tend to project out too far.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think you're more, you're better at looking at the present situation. And I'm kind of like foretelling the future, you know, which is really not a good place to be in. But yeah, so I think in that was...
No, they both belong.
Yeah, they for sure belong. But I think there's a peace when you can be present and see what is. It's, it can be more, like for me, it feels like a lot more turmoil when I'm trying to, when I'm projecting the future, which, do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
It's just like, be here and see what she needs in this moment, which is part of this discovery, what I learned in this journey.
Right. I think we became closer together because of a group project.
Yeah.
A shared project.
Yeah.
And that always brings relationships closer when you have a shared project.
Yeah.
But at the same time, the shared project wasn't us.
No. No.
Right? It was Ellie.
Yeah.
And so the focus and the attention ends up going outward.
Yeah.
Not on necessarily on this.
Yeah.
And how to make this flow better and how to make this communication better. Because you're constantly adapting to just crazy emotion going all over the place. Mm-hmm. And so I think, yeah. Did we get closer? Yes. Did we get further away? Yes.
Yeah.
I think it was both, just in different ways.
Yeah. I think, though, coming out of it, though, I feel as though we kind of continued on that path of, like, oneness towards the same project, where we felt like we were mostly unified about the decisions that we made and the steps that we took, even if it felt like a little bit of, like, going from fifth to first sometimes or fifth to third, you know, like, this feels a little bit jerky, but it was... We were really connected in how we viewed that. Okay, next question. What was your greatest anchor as a parent?
Greatest anchor?
I almost didn't put that one in here because I was like, well, but yeah, what was your greatest anchor? I was kind of interested to know what was yours.
Not entirely. I think maybe the reality that this is going to take a long time.
Mm. Like accepting it.
Accepting what is in the moment and being like, this is going to take a long time. Mm. And not hoping for things to be magically different tomorrow. Mm. So I think it's just the reality of like, this is going to be a while.
Yeah.
Was enough of an anchor to change my expectations. So I could just anchor back to, yeah, we're right on track.
Yeah.
We're right on track for a 1 to 2 year turnaround. Hmm. And maybe that's just me mitigating expectations and hope.
Yeah.
But for me, that ended up being the space where it's like, we're fine. We're fine to have ups and downs. We're fine to have very slow, incremental progress. Hmm. And not just be hoping for it to all go away. Because this too belongs and can teach and can shape and has and does. Mm-hmm. Like the experience of her going through that, what does she know about herself now?
Yeah.
What confidence does she have to face other things?
Yeah.
Knowing, I came through that. So yeah. It all belongs. It all shapes. So for me, yeah, just the anchor is just mitigating those expectations, which in moments like that can be hard. Coming from like a charismatic Christian background where, you know, miracles and you can just change things. You just pray for it and it can all change in a moment. But then something that always got me was like there's no record in the Bible of someone having emotional healing in an instant. The stories tell of physical healing. They tell of like demon possession and stuff like that happening in a moment, being relieved of that, but nothing about emotional healing happening in an instant. In fact, the stories are the exact opposite. The people walking through terrible, horrible things and having to process it. So, yeah. I think that would be my anchor, is just knowing it's a long journey.
Yeah.
You?
For me, I can recall, because I felt very like scattered in the beginning, just very lost and like and anxious and fearful and helpless and everything that, you know, just like there is no way to reach her. Ellie's always been such an affectionate person. We are an affectionate family. And so to not have her want anyone close to her, for her to fear that, it was like, how do I help her and how do I love her in the only way I feel like I know how?
Right.
And so I remember, I don't know, it was quite a few weeks or months into this, and I was just like distraught, and I ended up going on a walk on our patio, this huge patio. And I'm just going and walking up there, and
we had the main part of the house.
Yeah.
And you go outside, there's the pool, and then we had four bedrooms in like almost like a wing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
There was like a sitting area with a spiral staircase up to this patio. So it was like four bedrooms long was this patio.
The people that built it was built for their daughter's wedding. So they seated like 70.
Oh, I didn't even know that.
Yeah, they seated like 70 people up there. That's where they had their wedding. Nice. So it was like intentionally, you know, it was like ocean view and, you know, it's gorgeous. But I was up there walking and I just was like, all these things going in my head, all this like thought going in my head. How do I do this? How do I do that? Like, what if this? And like all these scenarios, and taking some of my younger self into that too, being like, I've been, you know, the teen who's been just tormented by fear. Mm-hmm. And so I was like, how do I not need something from her? Like, want her to get better. And that pressure that I felt as a kid too, just like, we're just going to just like pray it away, and it didn't go away. And it was just like, I don't want her to have that shame or that weight on her.
Right.
And so I remember walking and just like all these things going in my head, like really, you just want to erase it. You know, there's anger. There's all these feelings that come with seeing your child hurt. And for me, I started to talk to myself, like from my wiser self. It was like, I would like to call it love. And it was like, we would hang out up there. And once I did it once, and I was just like, Janelle, like, you need to be the pillar that she can lean on. You can't reach for her. Leave room for her to reach for you. Like, if you need something from her, she feels that in her heart. And then naturally has to protect herself because she can't predict your next move.
Give you what you need.
Right.
Yeah.
Like, it's like, it just made so much sense to me. And I was like, okay. And I started recording myself, talking to myself, Janelle, you need to understand this. And like, and the things that only I knew I needed to hear, only things I knew were going through my head. And once I became very acquainted with love and with my wiser self, I was like, okay, that became an anchor for me. And I would go for sure every Monday. Sometimes it was more times in a week, but I would go every Monday, record myself. And then the rest of the week, I would listen to myself talking to myself, because I needed to get it ingrained in my heart.
Right.
And it needed to go from like knowledge from my mind and seep into my heart. And that's what kind of like calmed. That's where the anchoring began. And it continued. I found recordings all the way through into Scotland. And I was like, yeah, like listening, hearing, knowing what only I need to hear from my more loving self. Mm-hmm. That was definitely an anchor for me. When you look back, what version of yourselves as parents do you wish you could go back and hug? when you look back on that scenario of us, our time with
what
Ellie,
version of myself do I wish I could go back and hug
as a parent in that season?
Two.
Okay.
Now, myself now. I tend to shut down. Not shut down emotionally. Shutdown's not the right term. I tend to closet. Mm. Okay, this thing is happening. There's emotion all over the place. This happened when you had your miscarriage. Mm. We lost the twins. It's like, I need to pillar up and I need to be in a space of giving. Mm. And so I tend to push everything to the side for the moment. Closet it for the moment. And then go and do all the stuff I need to do. Hmm. Be the pillar, be the strength. This is not time for me to process. Hmm. This is time for somebody else. Hmm. And then come back and unpack and visit that later.
Yeah.
At different times.
Yeah.
And so it's like even coming back here brings up those things. So even like her recording the other day brings up those things that I just take and pull from slowly and unpack them. So the emotional weight plays out for me much later. I don't know if that's healthy or not. It gets through the moment and it's not an avoidance of the moment because there's a lot of times where things will happen that I do need to process immediately.
Yeah.
And I have no problem doing that. But I think it's when there's reliance on me and others need the space, then I can put it aside. But the one moment during was when we were in the car and we first addressed Ellie. When that first went down, we took a little drive, went down to Madeiras Beach. Mm-hmm. The idea was to go out onto the beach. Mm-hmm. The sun was setting. And we were going to have this conversation, and she was not getting out of the car. So we had a big SUV, and she was right behind you, and we were both turned in the front seat talking to her. And then she was triggered and felt unsafe, and she literally crawled backwards into the back seat. Do you remember this? Mm-hmm. Like way into the back. So she's in the third row, and we're in the front. And so there's this entire empty space between us, and she couldn't have gone any further back. And it's like, oh, we're not safe. Nothing is safe. And in the moment, I took it incredibly personally. Mm-hmm. And then about 2 seconds later, realized, no, that's not what it is. She just doesn't feel safe. And so then even just like if we let this go, we may never coax her up into the second seat, let alone be next to us. So then the negotiation began of just getting her into that seat. And I think if I could have used a hug, it would have been in that moment for myself now, back then, mm-hmm. to be like, it's going to be okay.
Yeah.
Like, it's going to be okay. And I think that's when I actually realized this is going to be a long time. Mm-hmm. And we didn't know anything. Mm-hmm. We didn't know what happened. We didn't know what went down. She wasn't talking. No. She couldn't talk about it. No. And so it was like in this space and trying to solve a problem that you don't know how.
Yeah.
Not that even knowing would matter.
No.
You know, knowing doesn't actually change it. What happened doesn't actually change what you do next.
Yeah.
We think for some reason, if we just know, it doesn't actually change much.
Yeah.
So for me, that would be it. Mm-hmm. The moment back then. What hug do you need back then from you now?
There are so many moments. Some of them feel more faded. Some of them are more etched, but there's this time when we were sitting in the car again, and it was towards our time of leaving Nicaragua, and we were sitting out front of a nail shop. It was a pink sign outside, in San Juan, and with all the kids in the car. And Lexi was trying to figure out what her next step was and like how to be there for Ellie. And it felt like such an emotionally charged from everybody. Like, I remember Mikel's response. He was like, he was dealing, like, seeing the effects, I think, that it had on everybody. And, you know, seeing Mikel, like, be really hurt and also a bit lost, you know? And Kiki, who was her best friend, be like, I don't have a friend anymore.
Right.
You know, and seeing, like, these, what looked like giant craters between all of us. And, like, feeling super lost in that moment and be like, what are we doing?
Yeah.
Just not knowing. We've been so close. And then this just felt like it was shattering everything we knew about each other. And it felt like I didn't know.
How wonderful is that, though? That you change one piece of this puzzle of six.
Yeah.
And it all comes tumbling down.
Yeah, we were...
How interconnected.
Mm-hmm.
How intertwined are the lives that you change one ingredient in the mix and it throws chaos into everything.
Yeah.
And unbalance into everything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Terrible, because you have to deal with all of that at once. Mm-hmm. But, man. The closeness,
mm-hmm.
that would actually have an effect on those around you.
Yeah. 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 It was pretty special. It was pretty hard, and I really could have used a hug from my now self in that moment.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that was definitely a moment for me where I was like, I don't know if we're coming out of this. You know?
Yeah.
I don't know if this, I'll say this question, but I don't know if it's something we can speak to, but was there a moment when you realized you were not on the same page? I don't really, or do you have a moment, maybe you have a moment that I'm like, I don't think so.
I would say no, because we didn't have a page. Half the time it was like looking for
a page,
a page to write on, let alone like not be on it. So we were looking at so many things. One of the things I didn't see coming,
mm-hmm.
was the lack of availability of help.
Hmm.
So in looking for a therapist,
yeah,
and someone, a counselor, a psychologist, anybody for her to see, mm-hmm. There's so many restrictions and rules on people because they're not in the same country with the person they're dealing with.
Yeah.
That they can't,
yeah.
Even if they're like willing to take it on, they can't.
Yeah.
And so like even the process of just finding somebody.
Yeah.
Unfortunately.
It was difficult. So yeah. Difficult. Days, weeks, emailing, sending an application, sending in like just looking, and then her age, and then her, what kind of therapy we were suggested was art therapy, which was mm-hmm. so good for her because she was quite young and very visual learner. And processor. And so it's like, this will be great. But that was like another element of, where do you find that?
Right.
Yeah.
We did. In Australia.
Yeah.
Which was great.
It's amazing.
But like the, just couldn't find someone
yeah.
that would be allowed to accept it because of yeah. regulations.
Yeah.
And so it's like, okay, there's a gap here I did not even know existed.
Yeah.
So that was hard to find a page.
Mm-hmm. It was.
Then once we found one, it was all colored on and colored in
yeah.
with all sorts of emotional drawings.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, no, I don't think we were ever not on the same page.
No, we were just trying to look for it.
I think there was a bit of yo-yoing and slingshotting.
Yeah.
Where one would go ahead a little bit
mm-hmm.
and that would create enough tension to bring the other one forward. Then that would sort of slingshot. And so I think we had...
Yeah.
That, but tethered the whole time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What has surprised you most about each other in this whole journey as parents?
You can go first.
I was really appreciating this you go first part because that would give me time to process what I want to say. What has surprised me? Okay, so in reference to what you were saying before, you are somebody who tends to be very strong and supportive in a space when you see other people need to be, even if it's hit you. Like, you just, you can kind of place your things later on.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, not that it surprised me in a bad way at all, but I think seeing how much this affected you. Like, wiping your tears. In those small moments, just seeing you break.
What surprised me the most about you is your ability to change your love language. I think there's a lot more love languages than the six or seven or whatever it is that the book talks about. Like, I think sarcasm is a love language because if it wasn't, my family would never say anything to each other, let alone know that they love each other. But your ability to change how you show and receive love and still communicate the depth of your care and love. I think that surprised me the most. That you found a way.
You were good at leading that. How did you make space for your own grief or fear while still showing up steady for Ellie?
I think we covered a little bit of that about being able to closet the grief part.
Mm-hmm.
The fear is just be present. For me, it's just be here now in this space. Accept what is. We have no idea what tomorrow is. We have no idea what a year from now is. So the lowering of those expectations to say this is going to take a long time mitigated my fear.
Yeah.
And gave me the anchor that we talked about in the other question. But it put me in a space of acknowledging what is. And we never talked around the issue with each other or with her.
Mm-hmm.
We talked directly about it.
Mm-hmm.
And removed any sort of stigma and shame as much as we could about it. And today we joke about it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, she jokes about it. It's not something that's hidden. It's not something that's tucked away. So I think for me, the fear part was just being present in it.
Yeah.
What do we do today?
Yeah.
You?
Yeah, it was harder for me to feel steady, like I said.
Yeah, you're a domino.
Yeah. And just because I'm projecting what's coming. And I think it comes from some of my own things I went through as a teen and as an adult. So it was a bit of a projecting myself on that situation as well. My younger self and...
Naturally.
Yeah. And so I think my fear, how did I stay steady? Again, it was probably just those walks.
Yeah.
It was just finding the ground beneath me and realizing everything I needed to hear was right here. And I just needed to tune into that.
Your wiser self.
Yeah.
Love speaking to you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's how I was able to create space. Because there were tears that were in those conversations with myself. And there were very tone, a tone in my voice that, I needed to hear that only myself could tell me.
Can I hear that tone?
Save that for later. What did support from others actually look like in the season, and what wasn't helpful at all? That was an interesting question. I'll go first.
Yeah, go first.
What did it look like in the season? Well, I had people in my life. We have people in our lives that are therapists.
Mm-hmm.
And honestly, it was having conversations with them to help me understand that, like, there is no one answer to the solution to her journey, right. That it does take time, that even a therapist is, like, sometimes it's their actions and their reactions are unpredictable. And so to leave room for Ellie to show what she needed.
Mm-hmm.
And I think those conversations really helped me realize that, like, A, I'm not crazy. And B, like, give it space.
Mm-hmm.
And see, there's no one answer.
Right.
And I think that really, really helped me kind of just, because I grew up in thinking that there was one answer and that answer didn't work for me. And so it was really hard when it's like, it's not that I don't believe in prayer. It's not that I don't believe in the power of prayer or these things. It's just that, like, I think there are many ways that help guide us towards our recovery.
Right.
It's not just one way. Maybe for some, but I think there's many ways to find your healing. And I think in those conversations, it allowed me to see, like, other ways to help balance her body, to help balance her nervous system, you know, like working with breath work and like tapping. And there's so many different ways, and like songs and music and art and these things. It's like, mm-hmm. it wasn't about her having to be anything in those moments. It's that she could express herself through the art, express herself through the music.
Right.
You know, like, it wasn't about masking it or trying to just like pretend it didn't exist. The tapping was to, like, when you feel anxious in a space, you know, you can do these things, and it really helps bring your nervous system to a more calm, steady space. And it was like learning these tools that were part of the journey. Mm-hmm. And I think talking to people, talking to the therapist, talking to some of my friends who are therapists, it really was so helpful. What was really unhelpful for me is when people would compare her to someone they knew and tell me their scenario. It created a lot of fear in me, being like, these are the reasons this so-and-so did this. And it would make me feel like it triggered the anxiousness in me even more. That was really unhelpful, to hear what somebody else went through and how dark it got for them before it got better, or how many years or how many decades.
Right.
That was just like added torment.
Right.
To me.
What wasn't helpful for me? There was very little that wasn't helpful, because I tend to throw most of it away and rely on those that I trust the most. So I filter automatically. Just in general, I filter with people's opinions or all sorts of stuff. So when it came to like opinions on what to do with this, it would be the ones I would go to and ask specifically that I would listen to. Mm-hmm. And then everything else I'd just nod and throw in the trash. Maybe some of it was useful, maybe not. But if I didn't trust the source at the moment, I didn't even make it into my purview. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So one really good friend was walking through something just a few months earlier with his daughter. And so there's three of us in the moment that were having these conversations. And one of the things he did was like, just affirm identity was his advice. Just affirm her identity in this. Something to ground and anchor, something repeatable, something she can memorize and just keep repeating, and that you can keep repeating. And so it became the little mantra that I had with her all the time, where I ask her, who are you? And she'd respond, I'm Ellie. And then I'd say, what do? She'd say, brave things. And so it was like this grounding of identity in who she was. You are in the middle of something.
Yeah.
So it's not about pushing that away. It's not even a promising that it goes away tomorrow or whenever. There's no timelines on it, but it is a grounding of identity of you do brave things. And what's brave to me and brave to her or somebody else is completely different. Because brave might be one less layer of 9 layers of clothing.
Yeah.
It might be 3 to 4 inches closer when you're still 6 feet away. But that's bravery for her in that moment. And she got to define that.
Yeah.
We got to define the fact that she is brave. Yeah. She does brave things.
Yeah.
That's who she is. She's someone that does brave things. And that went over and over and over and over multiple times a day.
Yeah.
Just in passing, in the middle of conversations.
Yeah.
Anytime she came up with something and had the courage to say that she was experiencing something, get to use that. And so that is some advice that came from a group of guys that were experiencing similar things that I trusted, that I knew. And then we'd share things back and forth. So I think there's a great aspect to like filtering your advice.
Yeah.
And you have to trust your heart and your gut in that.
Yeah.
It's a lot of well-meaning experts as well. But it, like you said, everything is unique.
Yeah.
That's the hard part. Because it's all unique to that situation and that person. So. Yeah.
Yeah. That's a good one. All right. How has this experience changed the way you see parenting now in comparison to when you first became a parent? there's so many decades, so many moments before that.
I used to run sound at a convention center that had these big gatherings of people. So there was a teacher's convention one day, and all these teachers were there, which was a bit of a nightmare for me. But anyway, the one teacher on the stage says, I was teaching grade one, and all these kids came from kindergarten the year before. And on day one, they all went, and she's like, okay, it's lunchtime. And this one kid went and put his jacket on and got his backpack. He's ready to go home. And he's like, oh no, what are you doing? She's like, well, I'm going home. It's like, no, this is grade one now. We have lunch. And then we do a whole second half of the day at school. The kid's like, who signed me up for this shit? And I think parenting's a little bit like that at times, where you just, from when you first start, you're like, oh, it's a baby and a thing and everything is new and wonderful. And then it's like moments where it's like, oh, who signed me up for this?
Yeah.
Like, I have no idea what I'm doing. Like, and then they're all different. What works for one is completely useless on another. And there's no manuals and there's nothing you can go to. And it's like, I think it's more just when you have a great relationship with them as people, you can trust your understanding of knowing what's going to be good for them and what's not. So what has changed? Everything. Yeah. Absolutely everything. Because you throw all the rules away constantly.
Yeah.
As you're entering different phases and different kids. And it's a constant management of learning new rules.
Yeah.
All the time. Because your role changes. You know? So everything has changed constantly.
Yeah. It's hard to compare when I was first a parent to now being 20, whatever, 3 years into it. What do you learn? I would say that being a parent of late teen adult children has taught me things far beyond what I ever thought I could learn. Especially as a young parent, you don't realize that parenting when you have a child
is, it's forever. Like, you different parts of you have to change and grow because they change and grow.
Mm-hmm.
And then they require different things from you. And the things that they required and listened to you about when they were 10, entirely different when they're 20.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think what I learned through this particular season is that I can trust my knower. I can trust love.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're a new parent, this is something I wish I would known earlier in life, to trust that. With little kids, with decisions, with choosing what school they go to. Like, we oftentimes know things way ahead, and yet we reject knowing because we're afraid of
being wrong
or somebody else's opinion, or like, but oftentimes we know. If we're just listen a little bit, we probably know what our 13-year-old daughter is going through and why she's not talking to us. Like, many of my friends, it's like, what do you do with these 13-year-old girls? It's like, just sit still for a second. Be 13 for a minute. Like, for me, I think the thing I've learned in the last couple of years is, like, be 14 again, Janelle. What did it feel like when that first happened to you?
Hmm.
What did you need? What did you not need? Even with Lexi moving away, it's like, you know, she moved to a different country. It's like, I was that 19-year-old.
We moved to a different country. Yeah, she stayed in Melania.
You know, but like, I moved at 19 with you to Austria. Mm-hmm. And it's like, what did I need? It's so easy to say, like, what you should do. It's quite another to do it.
Right.
And to, like, be a pillar for your kids, no matter what season they're going through, to know that your security and your comfort doesn't come from them doing what you think is the best version of them. Do you know what I mean? Like, seeing Ellie go and give someone a hug. Oh, is that what I needed from her? No. I needed to be the steady person. I needed to find roots within myself.
Right.
That wasn't reliant on what they did or didn't do.
Right.
Alexis didn't need me to tell her how lonely she was going to be. She needed me to tell her how amazing it's going to be. And how proud I am of her, so that she could be lonely.
Mm-hmm.
And I could be the pillar to hold that. Like, that's what I've learned as a parent, is that to put myself in that position, to remember and be what I know I needed, but I had no idea how to ask for it. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Beautiful.
I think we have one last question.
Okay.
Okay. You're going to love this one.
Great.
If you could give one sentence of advice to a parent walking through something similar, what would it be?
One sentence of advice. One sentence.
I'm going to let you say as many sentences as you need. You can use all the words.
One sentence of advice. Acknowledge what is, where they're at, and that it's going to take some time.
I don't know if I have one sentence like that. That was good. It's really good.
I'd like to add a lot of stuff to it, but like, yeah. If it's one sentence, it's that.
I think mine just goes back to the things I've repeated a few times, is like, find your anchor within you and don't rely on your child to be an anchor for you, or that their actions are anchors for you, or allow space and time. My dad once said to me when I was in a really difficult season, he's like, give it time, baby girl, just give it time. And it's like, yeah, just give it time. We don't know that the lines of time, and that's okay. But your peace and your comfort doesn't need to come from what they are or aren't doing. It needs to come from your own anchoring. So find that.
Time is the sandpaper to all life's rough edges.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. Those are good questions.
Yeah.
Yeah. We have a surprise guest. Miss Ellie is going to join us. There's a couple questions that were sent in for Elle. And so she was like delighted to join us, which was amazing. So we're going to take a small little pause and Ellie will be back with us in a minute.
Hang tight. We'll be back after this short break. Season 2 is finally here. When I first started the Naked podcast, I honestly had no idea where it would lead us. I just knew that honest conversations really do matter. Somewhere along the line, I realized that the best parts often happen after we stop recording. The quieter moments, the ones you don't plan for. So this season, I'm inviting my guests to stay a little longer for those conversations. I am so excited to share that the Naked podcast now has a Patreon. A space with extended episodes, written versions of my solo pieces, and a few of the things I am building just for you. If this show has moved you, made you feel seen, or just kept you company, I'd love for you to join me there. All the details are in the show notes, just a little invitation to stay a bit longer. As we take this short break, think about someone who might need this story in their ears today and pass it on. Now, let's get back into it.
All right, Elle, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for inviting me.
Cheers, you're a little chai girl over here. So, as you know, your podcast has really impacted a lot of people.
I'm so happy about that.
Yeah. And a lot of people have commented and really felt touched by the words that you said and just your bravery. So, thank you so much for doing that. Dad was just talking about how he kind of had that, like, mantra with you. Like, who are you, Ellie? Or, yeah. Who are you?
Who are you?
Ellie.
What do you do?
Brave things.
And that was really brave of you. And even being here and being open to answering a few people's questions is really brave of you. So I'm so proud of you. I tell you that all the time, but I really am.
Thanks,
and,
Mom.
Yeah. And you just don't know who you're encouraging in, like, through your own courage. Mm-hmm. It's pretty cool. So I have a question for you.
Okay.
All right. What do you wish parents understood about what it feels like to be a kid walking through this kind of pain?
I guess how big everything feels. Like, there's not too much going on in your life, but when something does happen, it's like everything. Mm-hmm. Like, it's all that's going on. Mm-hmm. I'll probably say that, but I can't think of anything else totally.
Just how big everything feels.
Yeah, like all the emotions are huge because you're just so little. Mm. Yeah.
Do you have a memory of that?
I have a couple memories, but one that stands out was, I think, my first time having a dream, and you and Dad were there. I don't know if you guys remember it, but you guys were just sitting there, and I was, like, crying, and you guys were there, and I don't remember if I explained the dream or not, but, yeah, that's probably one of them.
The dream felt huge.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I do remember that.
Yeah.
In Scotland?
No, in Nicaragua.
Okay, there were two dreams.
Two dreams, yeah. But, yeah, I'd probably say that.
Hmm. Okay.
Oh, I remember now.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Rolodexing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Was there something Mom and Dad did that really helped you feel safe or seen, even if they didn't realize it at the time?
Okay, the first one that comes off my head is when I was doing therapy and you were at the end of the bed, like on the floor, and you just being there was like very comforting. Mm. It was very nice and I really appreciate it, even though all the doors are closed and it was a cooker in there.
What?
But it was, yeah, it was good because we couldn't have the fan on because of the sound.
Mm-hmm.
And like, I don't know, you guys caring and being worried about me was very sweet. And I really, what's the word? I really appreciated that. Mm. And I guess, like, the quiet time, like, maybe coloring or something with you guys was very nice, too. Mm. I like that. Yeah.
Little needle felting hour with Ellie.
Yeah, needle felting. That was so fun.
That was your safe space, hey?
Yeah, I love needle felting. Still do, but less often.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. If someone is listening right now and they're in the dark season, what would you want to say to them from where you are today?
Ooh. I'd say, I know it's really tough and it's going to be tough for a while, but slowly every day it will get better and easier to light up the darkness, even though if it doesn't feel easy now.
Mm.
Yep.
Ellie, my wise girl. What is something that helps you feel you again on the days when things feel heavy?
Coloring. Definitely coloring. Playing games with my family or just hanging out. Mostly like hanging out with family. Definitely that. Or writing with Kiki. That definitely helps too. Or like playing board games or video games with Mikkel or something. Something like that. Family. Around people.
Definitely. Yeah. Being around people.
So getting tactile, meaning working with your hands.
Yes.
Is definitely a thing. Does that like ground you back in your body? Or like what is working with your hands do?
It's like it takes more brain power to be doing stuff with your hands. So it's like less is happening in the brain and more focus on like what colors do I use on the page or something like that.
It's the concentration of having to be fully present for that pulls you out of the heavy things.
Yeah.
Presence. Yeah. Present. That's really good.
Yeah.
Those are the questions I have, Ellie. I don't know if you have anything else that you've thought about or want to say or talk about or that came to your mind in between recording and then this one.
Not much. I have always been interested of what like your guys's journey was when I was not around. But I can't think of any questions on top of my head except for what was your guys's like a relationship when I was not there, like you two.
I'll let Dad answer that.
Group puzzle solving. Like, how do we rescue this prisoner?
This prisoner
who's being held in darkness.
Yeah.
It's a little Stranger Things-ish.
Yeah.
Where it's just like, okay, they're gotta go rescue this and realizing you have no ability to do that.
Yeah.
So it was just the back and forth of like, we're kind of powerless in this outside of holding space.
Yeah.
Where we can create an environment where you can come out of your shell as you need to when you can.
Mm-hmm.
So that was most of it, I would say.
Yeah. Our relationship between Dad and I, we were talked about a little earlier in the podcast, and it felt very, for the most part, very steady.
Nice.
Like it's difficult. Trauma can do different things and be polarizing and hard in relationships, but I feel like Dad and I were both, like we talked about, we're both working towards your health and your well-being.
Mm-hmm.
And so we were a shoulder to cry on for each other. You know, we were the ones that held space for the questions. You're like at a complete loss, you know?
Yeah.
We were in it together. And sure, there were things that sometimes felt like difficult to navigate because we weren't sure what we were doing, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like through it all, it was quite like unified.
Yeah.
In the decisions that we made. Yeah. I don't know if you'll remember this, Al, but I brought it up in the podcast. And I remember when you were like wearing a lot of clothing and then you had like about 4 blankets wrapped around you. And I remember when Dad, I think you referenced this the other day, when he was like, you need to like make a decision. Like the therapist has told us now that you need to either choose pants
or blankets. I didn't remember that.
And the terror in your face, like, oh, you know.
Yeah.
And I remember when Dad said, like, we talked about this. He's like, I'm that's it. I have to do this. And I was so unsure of how you were going to respond to that. Mm-hmm. Because you were kind of drifting so much more every day, it felt like, that I didn't know if that was going to be have a spiraling effect for you.
Yeah.
How was that for you? Do you recall that?
I remember it being a bit of a stretch at first. It was like a huge hill to climb up. I was terrified to leave the blanket. But after a while, leaving the blanket more and more, it became easier.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think I threatened you.
I think you did.
I was like, with a little bit of reality of like, you are not going to have enough liquid in your body to maintain consciousness. We'll have to get someone in here to give you an IV.
Yeah.
So that you can have proper hydration in your body. And you're like, needles, people I don't know close.
Yeah.
It's like, it was a little bit of a threat, but it was like a reality.
Yeah.
Well, it was reality because it just happened to Kelea a few months prior because she got so dehydrated that she did have to have,
an IV.
Yeah, an IV. Yeah. So I think even you'd be like, oh my gosh, I actually saw that in real time. That could happen.
Yeah, I remember that. Thinking back now, I find it kind of funny.
Do you?
Yeah.
A little bit of pressure.
Yeah, you know.
I do have a question.
Yes.
After having gone through this, mm-hmm. Since you're brave and do brave things, has this given you any sort of like perspective of how strong you are and how, like, has it given you confidence that you can do other things?
In some ways I would say yes, but in other ways I would say no.
Okay.
Yeah. Like, I've gotten more scared to talk to people, less trustworthy, mm-hmm. less trusting.
Yeah.
Yeah. Would say in that kind of ways. But I find an easier way to tell, like, who people are and stuff like that.
Mm. Yeah. Interesting.
So do you mean, just to fully understand? Clarify. Yeah. Going through this process has caused you to be less trusting of people, clearly. But it's caused you to kind of know who people are? Like,
I don't know how to explain it. Like, I don't know someone, but I can kind of tell who they sort of are just from their energy and what they dress like and stuff like that. And mm-hmm. just, like, from really being, what do you call it? Like,
intuitive?
No, like,
analytical?
The word is, like, when you notice a lot of things.
Observant.
There we go.
Okay.
The more observant.
Ah.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
You have a radar inside your head. It goes off.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
And how has this process been for you now? Now it's been, like, sharing, mm-hmm. putting it out there, reading people's comments and getting their feedback. And now here answering some people's questions. How is that for you to speak about all of this so openly and outwardly?
At first, it was a little scary, but I'm happy that people can listen to it and, like, feel comfort and, what's the word, relate to it. Mm-hmm. And that my family know what was going on without me, like, sending so many messages and stuff like that. And the nice comments are very sweet.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. How's your heart about it?
Good.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's been good. That's How's good. Yours?
Good.
Yeah?
Yeah. It's, Dad and I were talking a little bit about this, just like going through this, you revisit the feelings a little bit. You revisit some of the moments that we went through. So sometimes that can be a little hard.
Yeah.
And the part can just be like, wow. Just a deep amount of gratitude for who we are as a family and who you are and who you've worked so hard to, like, find your bravery and your courage mm-hmm. and grow. And it's just like, when you can look back and see, it's like measurable growth.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, it's just pretty inspiring. Yeah. To see what who you've chosen to be and how you've come through it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I have another question.
Okay.
How did you guys, like, talk about or decide for me to not, like, watch more scary things and stuff like that?
So Ellie really found, she talked about this a little bit in the podcast, when she would, like, watch scary things, it actually would pull her out of, it's almost like being present again, right?
Right.
So you're so embodied because you're feeling you even did a research study on it just recently.
I did.
Yeah.
It was really interesting.
No, I'm trying to remember how we arrived at that. I think it was more you than me.
It was like Tomb Raider. I was playing that game and then I couldn't play it anymore. Remember?
There was a show that you that was going on. It was some sort of a scarier show and some
Last of Us, yeah.
Yeah, and something in me was just like, this isn't okay.
Right.
And I know for myself, and I try not to project myself on anybody else, but I remember as a child, as a younger person, there were certain images, certain shows that would trigger something inside me that was really unsettling. Mm-hmm. And I didn't always have the courage to say, I don't want to watch this because everybody else is watching it. And mm-hmm. it felt like I was in a space where that wasn't really, I didn't want to be that person, you know, fun wrecker. And there was a certain scene and something in me was like, this isn't healthy. This isn't good for her. Mm-hmm. And I don't know how, I know Dad and I had a conversation about that and then chose that show wasn't something you would watch anymore. Mm-hmm. But I remember, I don't know if you recall something to do with that there was something that bothered you in that specific. Yeah.
Yeah, I do remember.
Yeah. Yeah. And so I was like, I just wanted to listen, be intuitive to what like my knower knows. And I don't know if that's what Dad was like, okay, then no more. I'm not really sure where that went after that.
Yeah, that's a battle I don't fight with you.
A battle I don't fight with you.
I have in the past and it's just like, I don't win that one. So I just learned to trust you mm-hmm. and your understanding in that because of your sensitivity is far greater than mine. So it's more of a trusting and an avoidance of any further discussion about it. Because it's just, I don't win that one anyway. So I just accept it.
Yeah.
So, and trust it. Mm-hmm. It's a combo.
Yeah. Was that frustrating for you?
At first, yes, it was. Because I remember I couldn't watch like certain games or certain shows and stuff like that. I was like,
you can watch Bluey. Okay. Yeah.
That wasn't out yet. Oh, it's funny. But I remember some games I couldn't play when I was in the middle of them. I actually haven't started it up because it's just been so long. Yeah.
Just change the course.
Yeah. But I was a little bit frustrated at that time. But
and even those decisions, like even those little decisions were really hard to make because there in me for certain there's always this fear of like what does this propel her mm-hmm. like where does she go, you know, not knowing the outcome of those decisions for you we're always like
really super big. Worried
well I'm so glad Elle that like you chose to do this and you asked to do it and I'll never forget the surprise in my being.
You were quite surprised.
You know, that you wanted to share your story, and I'm so proud of you for being so open, for so honest, and the Dad and I have been able to walk through this with you and together. And if there's anything else you want to say, if not.
How did you navigate talking to the other kids about this kind of stuff? Ooh.
Well, he's got some good questions.
Straight honesty.
Yeah.
Because we didn't know much.
Yeah.
And so we had speculations. We're like, well, we don't actually know certainly don't know what to do. So we're trying to figure our way through.
Yeah.
And one of the things we mentioned earlier was how the disruption of one person in our family mm-hmm. caused like a fallout of balance of everything.
Yeah.
Like what Kilea was feeling. What Mikkel was feeling, what Lexi was feeling. And it's like it created like this domino effect mm-hmm. of everybody being off, which is like, I view it as wonderful.
Yeah.
Because if we weren't close, if we weren't important to each other, mm-hmm. then somebody, you know, something shifting and changing within one wouldn't affect everyone.
Yeah.
And so this, I was like, how wonderful is it? Like, that we're close enough that things can go sideways so easily mm-hmm. in everyone when one thing is wrong with one person.
Yeah.
So we addressed it head on.
Yeah.
And just like, this is what we're going through. This is what she's going through. We don't know what's what, but we know we have to do this today.
Yeah.
And then we'll talk to you again tomorrow and figure out what we need to do tomorrow.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so. Just being very transparent about the fact that we don't know what we're doing and that some things we're going to get wrong, but we're exactly day by day. What does today require of us? And how do we best hold space for you?
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, and be to them what they needed us in those moments as much as we could have.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, I have one more question.
Okay.
I've asked you this question. I haven't asked you this question.
Oh.
Yeah. How was it for you letting go of Squishy?
It was incredibly difficult to watch you go through that.
Mm-hmm.
Because you feel, I guess naturally, you were talking about earlier about remembering what it's like to be 14, remembering what it's like to be at these ages.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you tend to do that naturally as a parent. There's an intentional way of doing it, but then there's like the moments where, okay, we're driving to get rid of Squish, and I'm looking in the rear view of you two in the back,
mm-hmm.
and it's like, what is she experiencing? What is she feeling? You know, it was like, it was a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And then watching you bravely go through that was incredible, because it's nothing that we can really take away from.
Yeah.
The pain of the moment, the loss in the moment. It was sort of the last thing before we left to deal with.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, it was hard. He was everything to you.
Yeah.
In that space when we couldn't be.
Yep.
So.
Yeah.
Yeah, Squish is an angel, really. He was what we couldn't be. And that, yeah. Like, I'll forever be grateful for that we had him in our lives. I think he was a huge healer, a big part of your healing.
Yeah, he was really helpful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anything else?
Ooh. I don't think so, but yeah, I think that's all I have. Oh, wait, one more.
Oh.
Sorry. How was trying to figure out how to celebrate my birthday in that place?
Well, we were really creative.
Very creative.
Because birthdays are a big deal in our family. And we always like to celebrate from the moment you wake up until the moment you go to bed.
Yeah.
And in reference, this was February and your birthday was in April. So it wasn't actually that much further along.
Yeah.
And yeah, it was like, how do we do this without getting close to you? We ended up making this like ribbon from the top of this, like, throughout an entire hike.
That's right.
And we put little gifts along the walkway on the hike, and you would just hold the ribbon
up to the treehouse.
Up to the treehouse.
Right.
Kiki, the hero that she is, did that hike twice that day for you. It was like the hottest time of the year, and you just went up the trail basically on your own without anybody too close. And you got little gifts along the way. And at the top, we brought like a swing. So we were on this like hike, but had a beautiful like treehouse kind of a thing. And we put you in brought a swing so that you could sit in the swing. Then we all had a picnic on the platform because we knew that you wouldn't feel comfortable sitting on the ground on the platform with us. It was just honestly, Elle, like, I didn't mention this earlier on, but, like, there were so many little minute micro moments that I held on to as, like, the beauties.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and the beauty in that was just, like, that, like, you smiled. You did. Like, you didn't smile much. You were really in your head and you didn't talk much. And so it was, like, giving you those sunflowers and, like, mm-hmm. seeing you smile and just... I could see there's like a little bit of like light in you. And then we took you later on, Dad gave you the skateboard and
right.
like just seeing you be like moving your body because you hadn't really left the house much. And mm-hmm. so just feeling that out and like it was a huge celebration inside of me, even though it was such a version of you I'd never witnessed before.
Mm-hmm.
It was just like, I saw you smile and I saw you like move your body, like get on a board. And like, that was huge. I was just so proud of you and amazed by your courage in those small moments, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know.
Skateboard was to get you out.
Yeah.
And moving, but also knowing that you're going to need a little bit of help.
Mm-hmm. To learn.
Yeah. And so I got to hold your hand
mm-hmm.
at as much distance as possible, trying to get you to learn. And that became safe.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah. I love that skateboard. So cool.
Surf skate.
Even surf better.
Skate. Yep.
Yeah. Well, if that's a wrap.
Yeah.
That's a wrap. Thank you for joining us, for being here, for listening to us navigate these questions and and just kind of sit with each other in this space of just continuing to learn about each other and about the season and, yeah, walking a little bit of bravery every day.
Yeah.
So thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks, Boo.
Thanks, Mom.
Thanks, Dad.
I want to thank you so much for being here, for taking the time to listen to The Naked Podcast. It honestly means so much. If there's something in the episode that has moved you, share it with someone who might need to hear it too. And if you haven't already, give us a follow and leave a review. It helps so much to keep the momentum and keep the show growing. For more conversations, reflections, and ways to stay connected, check out the link in the show notes. Until next time. If you'd like to connect with us or possibly share your story, please contact us at nakedwithjanelle@gmail.com. That's nakedwithjanelle@gmail.com. Thanks so much.